Hey, Jim. I'm Ginny, your host of Drinking with Jen. Thanks so much for being here. I'm really excited about our conversation today. So it is my birthday week, and I thought, what better way to celebrate than to do a list? So we are going to do, I was thinking like birthdays, you know, people make a lit, like a birthday list, and, you know, just reflective and thinking about different topics and ideas. So before we jump in, we always start every episode with what are you drinking? And today I'm just drinking a good old latte. And I hope whatever you're sipping on as you are listening along that it is enjoyable. So what I want to do today is talk about, since it's my birthday week, before we jump in, I guess, what I would like to ask for my birthday is if you haven't already, share this episode with a friend or share your favorite episode of Drinking with Jen with a friend. And if you haven't left a review and followed and subscribed, please do that on Apple. You can leave a review on Spotify. You can just leave a rating. All of those stars are greatly appreciated. All of the shares are greatly appreciated. Share it on your social media. Share it directly with somebody. That's all I'm asking for my birthday this year. So I appreciate it. That said, like I mentioned, I kind of created this list. And now look, I could have added a whole lot of other stuff, but I'm like, we only have time for one episode. And honestly, each of these items could probably have their own episodes because there's just such good life lessons or things that I have learned along the way. And I want to share them with you. And I think you'll see that a lot of these things are consistent with things that I talk about on a pretty regular basis, but I wanted to kind of compile them into one spot because I thought it would be helpful. And again, I think this is something that there'll be hopefully at least one thing that really resonates with you or that makes you think of somebody else, a friend or a family member, where you're like, oh, they might want to hear this too, or they might want to hear this because of someone else in their life. But I compiled this list and I went back and forth on how many items to do, because sometimes I'll see lists and people are like 13 simple things that you need to do. And I'm like, 13. Oh my gosh, that is so many. And I was like, well, three is not enough. I love three. We're in March. But for my numerology people or my numbers people out there, 2024 is the year of eight. It's an 8 year because it's 2 + 2 + 4 = 8. Incidentally, I am turning 44. 4 + 4 = 8. So that is how I came up with the number to settle on, because otherwise I could have probably made you a list of 80 or 600 things or like lessons that I've learned in the past year, the last month, the last week. But I just wanted to kind of put something together that was meaningful that I think everybody can probably relate to at least one of the items on this list. So kind of how I'm phrasing it, and this will be this week's newsletter. So if you don't already subscribe to my newsletter, I'll put a link in the show notes. But also if you're connected with me over on Instagram at Ginny Preem, you can tap the link in bio. I'm on Substack and it's just my name. That's where you can find my newsletter. But so this is going to also be the theme of the newsletter this week, which will just give a little bit more. I'll probably do a little bit more storytelling, a little bit more detail in the newsletter. And, you know, tell some of the stories here as well. So they'll be very aligned in terms of content. And so it's kind of, as I was reflecting, I was like, these are sort of eight things that I wish I knew when I was 24 instead of 44, because man, that would have sure been helpful. Even not even 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 7 years ago. These are all things that I have experienced and learned kind of on this trauma healing and this healing journey. So I really hope that you find at least one little gem in here of something that you can relate to. Or, you know, like I said, think of somebody that you want to share this with. So are you ready? I hope I'm ready. Let's begin. So the first one is, no one can tell you how to be you. No one can tell you how to be you. And this really boils down to authenticity. And if you are someone that's here on the trauma healing journey, maybe you grew up with a narcissistic parent or sibling, family member in a narcissistic household, this may really resonate with you because you often are told how to be, who to be, what to do, how to do it. And I think when you can finally get to a place of living authentically as you, you realize how unique and the gifts that you, how unique you are and the gifts that you have to share with the world. Like what you have to offer and bring is something only you can bring to the world. And no one else is exactly like you. And I think when we can shed some of the things that I'm going to talk about later on the list, and we can own our authenticity and embrace it and embrace who we really are, it's really magical. And, you know, there are no two people just like you. And I think about that, like there's no two people that are just like me. And if there were, that could either be really boring or maybe a little scary. I don't know. I don't really know which one. But people can inspire you, sure. But we're not copycats of each other. And you can never be doing it wrong when you are being fully and authentically you. And it is unhealthy and it's boundary breaking for someone else to want to try to control you or tell you how to be. So I think that's a big learning lesson, you know, for me, and really like shedding my false sense of armor and authentically being myself and being confident in who I am, knowing who I am. You know, I feel like a little bit later in life, I didn't really start that journey until I was in my later 30s. And so I just think how far ahead I'd be had I had the opportunity or awareness to kind of fully step into myself, you know, even years before that, because it is a really beautiful thing. There's actually, I think there's a story, I might have shared it here on the podcast before, but there was a young woman I met, a daughter of a friend of mine, a couple of summers ago, or maybe it was even just last summer. Anyway, she was 14, and I was just so impressed at how well, at 14 years old, she knew herself. She was authentically her. You know, she was just talking about what she's interested in, and that, you know, there's other kids that were interested in other things, but that's just not her thing. She knew what she liked. She knew who she was, and I was so impressed, and I just really admired it. So number one on this list of eight things that I wish I knew, and I hope that they help you, is nobody can be you. No one can tell you how to be you. It's that authenticity piece, living life and stepping fully into your authenticity. The second one, and this is an important one, and I have a little story to share about this as well. Your ego is holding you back. Your ego is holding you back. And there are a lot of different reasons behind this. So, you know, a lot of what our ego stunts for us is curiosity. And that curiosity really helps us continue to learn and be excited about new things, you know, try new things so we can continue to learn what we like and what we don't like. And more importantly, I just think what we like, what we enjoy, those things that bring us joy and enlightenment and happiness in life, our ego gets in the way of that. Last year for spring break, I was on spring break with my modern family, my two bonus kids and their mom. And I see this a lot in the oldest, because we had found an experience, and this had happened the year before also, when we had looked at doing sort of an excursion, like a new fun thing that was in Hawaii. This past year, it was in Mexico. So we had found this really cool tour. It was like zip lining, ATVing through the jungle, down to the ocean. And it was just like this awesome opportunity. And the oldest was like, no, I don't like that. And we all kind of like, we tried to have a conversation, you know, over the day, but ultimately we didn't go. And it's such a bummer to me because, but again, especially if you grow up with a narcissistic parent, there is a lot of people pleasing and there is a lot of fear of rejection and fear of failure. But again, that is just your ego getting in the way. And I was so bummed out because we didn't end up going. And I thought, man, now they missed out on this opportunity and this experience. Like, when is the next time they'll be in a place and in a situation that will present the opportunity to go ziplining and ATVing from the jungle to the ocean and have that kind of an experience? And I just think that's such a good learning lesson, because ego is so much driven by fear of maybe not being good at something, and worrying about what other people think. It also, when we are living in ego, it takes away the opportunity for us to be living in the present. And if you've been here for a long time, maybe you've heard some of the other experts. I think Corey Allen had alluded to this, and Melissa, who talked about loneliness on another episode, she talked about how when we are in the present, we can't feel feelings of anxiety or depression because we are so fully living in the present. Anxiety is forward thinking and depression is past thinking. And so when we are fully living in the present, our ego isn't there. And so I think I just want to invite you for a second to think about how much of your life and your decisions are being driven by ego versus heart. And when you can make that shift again, and this is all a work in progress too. Like, these are of course things that I learned. Am I perfect at any of them or all of them? Of course not. But these are just really important lessons that I think when I can catch myself living in ego, or my ego gets in the way or like kind of steps in. I had a moment a couple weeks ago where I called a friend and I was like, look, I'm really trying to be objective about this situation that I'm dealing with right now. I'm trying to see, like, is this my ego or is this really the situation? And it's really nice to be able to talk to other people about those experiences as well. So that's the second one. Number two is your ego is holding you back. And I just wish that somebody would have told me that. The other thing, you know, about ego real quick before I move on to number three, is that our egos form at about age 7. So if you think about, like, if you have kids or have friends, you know, nieces and nephews, or have friends that have kids, or if you were a kid once, because we all were, you know, if you think about kids that will get up on a stage and dance and perform and do performances, they're very free, will, like, very freely able to do that at ages 3, 4, 5, 6. They don't care because the ego hasn't been formed yet. They're not worried about what everybody else is thinking. They're not worried about messing up. They are just living their best life and having fun and being curious about what they are enjoying. So just a really interesting kind of educational piece in there about kind of when the ego forms. It's about age 7. And if you think about it, that's kind of when we start to pull back on, you know, that curiosity and that playfulness that we have. So again, that's number two, is that your ego is holding you back. Number three, this is a big one. Experiences are greater than things. Experiences are greater than things. And for me, a lot of this was who I had in my life. Like, this one, it really hits home for me, and maybe you can relate to this as well. But the people that I had in my life were so focused on things. The next designer bag, the next watch, the next house, the next car, the next thing, the next designer item of whatever. You name it, there's always a desire for it. And I would say, it was actually about when my brother passed away. So my brother passed away in February of 2017. So just over 7 years ago. Gosh, that's crazy. But that was the year where I really started to prioritize experiences. And for me, those experiences are really about traveling and vacationing and seeing other parts of the world. And whether that's with people, or I just took my first vacation by myself in December, just a few months ago. But those experiences, like at my brother's funeral, I did speak. And one of the things that I talked about was how we had this family, like sick family joke that if someone in the family got a new item and we liked it, we would say, oh, I'm going to put my sticker on that. And what that meant was that when that person, or if that person passed away, you're staking claim to that item. And at my brother's funeral, this was such an important moment. Because again, I think this is where that shift for me started to happen, was this losing my brother was really the first big traumatic thing that happened in my life. It was so sudden and so shocking. And at that time, all I could think about putting my sticker on was just more time with him, because the time that we spent together was, you know, doing fun things, snowmobiling, ATVing. Like, he taught me how to go camping, and I didn't even hate it that much. You know, because to me, camping is going to the Holiday Inn, but or the Holiday Inn Express, whatever, like going to a hotel. But he just, we experienced things together. And so I think for me, that was like the big shift of when things became so much less important, and experiences and time with people. So I'll tell you, like, even I think back to being a kid, like, I was spoiled. I got a lot of the things that were always on my birthday list or on my Christmas list. And I remember some of those things, but probably the biggest thing that I remember from childhood was going on vacation to Hawaii. Like, those memories will last a lifetime. And those experiences create such beautiful opportunities for us to do, either, like I said, by yourself or with other people, with family, with friends. But those experiences, and I want to provide those for my bonus kids. You know, this week is spring break. We're jetting off to go somewhere again. This is our annual trip that we do as our modern family. You know, my bonus kids and their mom, and we have a blast. And because I knew that was such an important experience for me in my life, I wanted to be able to provide the same kind of opportunities for them and create those experiences and opportunities that do make memories that last a lifetime. So that's number three. Experiences are better than things. And trust me, I know you might be laughing, like, if you do know me, like, you know, I have a lot of nice things, but do those bring me as much joy? And again, like, that buying of things has shifted dramatically for me, especially over these past, you know, 6 years. Or 5.5, 6 years, I guess. So if you know, are somebody that also loves nice things, that's fine. And I think that's great. But really think about, what is that providing in your life versus an experience? So that's just, again, from my perspective, that has been something that has brought me more joy in life, is these experiences, you know, going to places like Greece and an African safari and Barcelona and, you know, Italy. And I've had Costa Rica. I've had the opportunity to go to so many incredible places, especially over these past several years. And I'm looking forward to the next. Like, that is the thing that I will continue to prioritize in the future, is experiences and travel, because for me, they've really turned out to be so much more valuable than a nice handbag or a nice watch or designer clothes or shoes or whatever. So that's number three. Number four, and this is a big one for me, and I think for a lot of people. Number four is, vulnerability is not weakness. Oh, man. I will tell you, I used to think vulnerability was so weak and showing emotion was weakness. And my perspective on this has shifted so much. So I know a little bit earlier, I alluded to the fact that I had, you know, I've removed this false sense of armor. So I think this authenticity piece, which was number one, and this vulnerability piece here, number four, are really connected. Because you have to be authentically you to truly be vulnerable. So I think they kind of go hand in hand, and you have, you know, can't really have one without the other. But I wanted to put them separate because I think they're both such big conversations. So for me, you know, showing I didn't used to be emotional at all. Like, people would make the joke that I was like Cameron Diaz in The Holiday because I never cried. And now I'm super emotional and not ashamed to show my emotions. And I actually shared on my social media not that long ago that I did a speaking gig, and it happened to be on Valentine's Day, which is the day that my dad passed away. And so I referenced my dad in my keynotes, my dadisms. So if you've been here a while, you've probably heard me talk about dadisms. And I made the mistake, and honestly, it wasn't even that big of a mistake. I don't care that I got emotional. I actually embrace it because I think it shows that we're human. And I remember years ago, this was, I think, when I was starting to, you know, shed this false sense of armor that I had, because people used to always say, oh, Ginny, you're so strong. And I don't agree. I don't think that I used to be strong. I think I'm strong now, but I think I used to be tough. And that's what I refer to as that false sense of armor, like this protective layer of toughness that wasn't really strength, because I actually think that vulnerability is strength. By being able to be completely open and share our stories for good or bad, and oftentimes, like, that's what helps create connection and community and, you know, connect with other human beings. And it might even help them. I mean, I look at the number of people that have reached out to me that have read my first book, You're My Favorite, or listened to the podcast, and it's helped them in some way, in some capacity. That's because I have been vulnerable and I've shared my own experiences and my own journey. Even this episode and these 8 things, like, these are things that I've learned that I've had to make big shifts in my life. And I want to share that growing, and I want to share because I hope that we're all always growing and evolving in some way. And so this vulnerability piece is, you know, really important. So I got emotional on stage, and going back to, it actually reminded me of an experience when I was in corporate America, and I was forced by my boss to put one of my employees on a performance improvement plan. And when we sat down and I had to tell them, I started crying. And they actually came back to me like a day or two later and they said, you know, I really appreciated that you cried because I didn't really realize you were human. Like, it actually made you human to me. And so while it was a really awful experience for me to have to put this employee of mine, who we're friends now still today, which is really cool. But it was a hard experience for me, but that was so memorable for me to have another person tell me, gosh, when you were emotional and you were upset because that was uncomfortable for you, really made you human to me. And I actually think that probably helped our relationship more in the future. And it was probably a big part of the reason why we are still friends 10 years later, and still keep in touch, even though neither one of us are in that industry anymore. So vulnerability is not weakness. And I'll tell you who I think is a really good example of this right now are the Kelce brothers. Seeing Travis and Jason Kelce be emotional, if you watched Jason Kelce's retirement speech, I think it was so inspiring. I think they are, like, especially having men right now show their vulnerability and their emotion is critically important. We need that right now. And I actually had shared on my social media an example of J-Lo. You know, her, she's also someone I think that you look at and you think, oh, she's so strong, she's so tough. And she got really emotional in a speech the other day where she, recently, where she was, you know, showing some gratitude towards Ben, her husband. And it was really, really beautiful. So vulnerability is not weakness. Contrary to what I used to believe, I think vulnerability is beautiful. I think it's a necessity. And if you are not already allowing yourself to be a little bit vulnerable, I'd like to challenge you to try it. Just try to tap into it a little bit with somebody that you feel really comfortable or safe with, because that emotional safety is really important. But vulnerability is not weakness. I actually think it's quite strong. So that's number 4. Number 5. And if you are here for the trauma healing from narcissistic abuse recovery, this one I think is really going to hit home for you. We are worthy. I am worthy. You are worthy. We are worthy. I think that people that have been in abusive relationships, whatever that looks like, toxic relationships, they've been in relationships with dangerous personalities, they had a childhood where they grew up with toxic personalities or dangerous people, feel like they are not deserving of good things. And I think it's that emotional and mental, that psychological abuse that is endured, that CPTSD, that complex post-traumatic stress disorder, that accumulates over time, that makes people think like, oh my gosh, am I good enough? I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. I'm not deserving. And you know what? You are. And it took me a long time to get to that place as well. But if you're here, you're probably a light. You're probably a bright light. You're what we call a light worker. And unfortunately, you know, maybe your light has been or was or is currently dimmed a little bit, or maybe you're working on brightening it back up. And that's why we're all here, right? Like, this is a personal growth chat. But you are worthy and deserving of all of the good that comes to you in your life. We have to stop minimizing ourselves. We can get down. I know it's a common thing or like a theme. If we don't get something that we think we really want and we don't get it right now, sometimes we can, you know, that can really make us sad or bummed out or depressed. And what if that just is creating space for you for something better? You know, it's kind of like a couple weeks ago, I shared a perspective in my newsletter about the word no, like three different perspectives on the word no. And one of them is, what if you're being told no for something because there's something better? It's making that space for something that's even better, that you're more deserving of. The timing might just be slightly off from what you think it should be. So what if that's creating space for the opportunity for the right thing, potentially something better that you didn't, like I said, think that you are worthy of, but you are. You are worthy. You're deserving. So am I. We all are. And I just think that's something that, you know, it takes a little bit of confidence, that authenticity, that vulnerability, that getting to know ourselves a little bit better on this healing and self-discovery and self-love journey to get to that place of really understanding that we are deserving and we are worthy of all of the good stuff. And especially if you're someone like me who's left corporate America, sometimes we can experience that imposter syndrome. Like, why? Like me? Why? Like, how am I? Like, but when you really can peel back those layers, going back to that authenticity piece, you can get to that place of understanding and knowing and standing strongly in the fact that you are worthy. So that is number five. Moving on to number six. Stop seeking external validation. Oh man, this is a biggie. So stop seeking external validation. I'm just going to put it in words. So a couple weeks ago, we had Corey Allen. He is a huge guru on self-improvement, on clarity, on intuition, on presence. And he said in the podcast, stop giving a shit about what other people think. And it's such a simple sentence, but also easier said than done. But when you can shed that need for external validation, again, this is part of that self-discovery and that self-love component, that authenticity, that vulnerability, all of these you'll see kind of weave in together, but it is life-changing. Stop seeking external validation about you, about your life, and about your decisions, because it's none of their business. It's nobody's business but your own for you to decide what job you want, what house you want, where you want to live, what car you want to drive or not drive a car, who you have in your life, what relationships look like for you. It's nobody's business except your own. And you have to trust your own intuition, trust your gut, trust your instinct, trust that voice, that little voice inside, whatever you want to call it. You have all of the answers. Stop seeking external validation because you and only you know what's best for you. And this one I just think is so huge when we can make that shift to trusting ourselves or getting back to the place, because I do have a whole episode on just intuition. Like, there's actually science behind intuition. This isn't just a woo-woo fluff and buff type of concept. Intuition, there is truly science behind it. So if you want more on that, you can go back and listen to the full episode in season one just on do you trust your intuition? Because for people like me who have been in relationships with narcissists, that gaslighting, those manipulative and toxic behaviors and techniques that are used on you, you start to not trust yourself. You start to ignore your intuition. But I'll tell you what, when you ignore your intuition and it's a big life-changing decision and it was, and your intuition was right, you'll never not trust your intuition again. So it might be getting back to trusting yourself. If that's a piece of you that you've lost, you can do it. I'm here sitting with you, talking to you as someone that has done it myself. So that whole piece of trusting your intuition, trusting yourself, knowing that you have all of the answers for you and that nobody knows what's best for you except for yourself. It doesn't matter who it is, they are going to think that they know better, but you know the answers and you know what's best for you. So stop seeking that external validation and caring about what other people think. Because the other thing is, you're not going to change what they think. Even if they think you should have a certain job or a certain house or a certain car or certain relationships, and then you change it, it's not going to change their opinion of you. So there's no sense in seeking or wanting to get that external validation. Live life authentically as you, and everything will come into place. So that is number six. Stop seeking external validation. Number seven, prioritizing yourself is not selfish. Prioritizing yourself is not selfish. This is a really big one. And this is one that I not only have learned for myself as being a recovering people pleaser, but it's something that I see so often in coaching clients, in my friends, just in general. And it's something that once you kind of become aware of it, you can't become unaware of it. But there's so many people that put so much emphasis on other people in their lives. So maybe it's their children or their spouse, or maybe it's their job title. But then when those things are removed, what do you have left? You have to invest in yourself. And so in my coaching model, Gin Path, and in and that is also in my second book, The Guided Journal, I'm my favorite. We call that N. That's the N for nurture. And this can look a lot of different ways. So nurture for one person and prioritizing yourself can look really different than what it is to somebody else. But this goes back to removing the ego and trying different things. Be curious about what works for you, what makes you feel good, what brings you joy, peace, enlightenment, and happiness. So if you think about how we care for ourselves, right? That nurture, some of it starts with how we treat ourselves and how we talk to ourselves, the things that we tell ourselves inside our head. Because, you know, I'm a huge proponent that our thoughts create our feelings shape our mood, and our mood becomes our reality. And so it all really starts with our thoughts and how we think about ourselves and how we treat ourselves. And so that making that shift to more positive thoughts, and or even just catching yourself. So maybe you catch yourself and you're not in a place to shift to a more positive thought, but at least you start catching yourself and acknowledging it, and you become a little bit more aware about how you treat yourself. But if you aren't making yourself happy and prioritizing yourself, and you make yourself feel like crap, how do you expect to treat other people and make other people feel good, right? So it's sort of a little bit of the chicken and the egg. You've got to put yourself first before you prioritize yourself, before you can prioritize other people. And this whole mindset thing is really important. And it's so important. That's why I created the Kind Key Mind Shift Workbook. You can grab it at my website. It's like $8. It's a 14-page document that walks you through how to shift your negative thoughts into more positive ones. It helps you keep track of it, helps you bring a little bit more awareness to it. There is science behind this, and I'm not just making this stuff up. The Mayo Clinic, I reference in another episode, Mayo Clinic, all about like negative self-talk and the effect that it actually has on us mentally, physically, emotionally. So we have up to 80,000, or I think it's 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day, up to 80% of them are negative. And they do impact our feelings, our mood, and our mood becomes our reality. So we have a lot more control and power over this, and prioritizing ourselves and prioritizing how we treat ourselves. And that begins with how we talk to ourselves, how we think about ourselves, how we think about our circumstances and our situations. And I can't emphasize that enough. So that is number seven. That is, prioritizing yourself is not selfish. We have made it to number eight. Oh my gosh. I hope that you've learned or resonated with something. Maybe you've made some of these shifts. And if you have, congratulations. I think that's huge. Maybe these are some of the things that you're aware of, or maybe there's something on here where you're like, oh, whoa, I didn't really think of that way. I would love your feedback. And if there's something else, like another list that you would like for me to do or hear about, drop it in the comments, DM me on Instagram over at Ginny Preem. There is Q&A on Spotify, so you can send me a message directly through Spotify. So let's finish up with number eight. And before I tell you what number eight is, I want to do a quick exercise. And I do this from stage sometimes. So don't think too much about this. Just really quick, if you are in a place to write it down, or you have your phone and you have your notes app open, really quick, or you just think about it. Who are the top five most important people in your life? Who are the top five most important people in your life? And of course, if you're driving, don't stop and, you know, don't write it down. Just think about it. Think about who are the top five most important people in your life. And I have a feeling how that shakes out, because I've done this experiment. I did it last night with my niece and my nephew. I've done it with family members. I've done it with friends. I've done it with a ton of people. I've done it from stage. And the answer is always the same. People always say if they're married or in a partnership, it's their spouse, their kids, their parents, their family. So my question to you is, where are you on that list? Did you think about yourself? And I've had people on the verge of tears. When I do this from stage, people scoff at the idea of that they didn't even consider themselves as a top priority in the top five. Priorities of people, most important people in their lives. So I know that ties a little bit back to number seven, which is prioritizing yourself is not selfish. This is just a little bit different take on that. And it's going to go in a little bit of a different direction. So number eight is, your best relationship in your life is indicative of the relationship you have with yourself. The best relationship in your life is indicative of the relationship you have with yourself. Whoa. So if any of your relationships that you have with other people can't really be any better than the one with you have that you than the one that you have with yourself, how are you prioritizing yourself? How are you paying attention to the people in your community and all of these other components that I've talked about? So I like this one because I kind of feel like it puts a bow on it. It brings back other people in your life, like, you know, your community. You know, I talk about things like your emotional bank account, paying attention to how do you feel after you leave interactions with certain people? Are they constantly draining? Is it like, oh man, that person, they've always got something going on. Or do you feel uplifted and like your heart is full and you feel energized? And also paying attention to, how do you think you leave other people feeling when you leave interactions? And of course, sometimes there are going to be give and take. I actually love, I forget who it is. I think it's Michelle Obama. I've heard her say something about like marriage and relationships are never 50-50. Someone's always going to be bringing more to the table or needing more, but it should feel balanced generally overall. And that's how I like to think of our emotional bank account. And of course, you know, I have to bring in a dadism, because, you know, I talk about this dadism all the time, is that you're only as good as the company you keep. And so this whole, you know, this is why our relationship with ourselves is so critically important, because that's what helps us build our community. That is going to be what helps us build connection. And if you are on a journey of growing and evolving, healing, you may start to lose relationships along the way. And that's not a bad thing. I actually was having a conversation with a really close friend who's having some struggles with a really long-standing friend right now. This close friend of mine is on a healing and growing and evolving journey. And as we grow and evolve, sometimes people that are in our lives, when we are in a less healed place, can't handle us growing and evolving. And that's okay. I think sometimes we in society, there's like this stigma or shame or guilt about losing relationships. And I don't think it's that bad of a thing, because what if losing that relationship opens up that much more space for more nourishing, meaningful relationships to evolve and grow in your life? I know that's something that I've experienced. I intentionally made some changes in my own community, and that has truly made more space for more deep connection, authentic, real, genuine, meaningful relationships in my life. So that kind of pulls everything together when we're talking about yourself and the people in your lives. And if you've reflected and, you know, enjoyed something in this, again, for my birthday, go ahead and share it with a friend, leave a review, leave a rating. But those are, you know, those were my eight. Like I said, I could have done 80, 800, 8,000. I could have done so many lessons of things that I've learned. But these are important ones. These were just ones that came to me from the heart that I wanted to share with you in the year of eight, as I'm turning 44. 4 plus 4 is 8. So anyway, I hope that, like I said, you found something useful, valuable, educational. Maybe you laughed at me or something in here. So hopefully it was entertaining in some capacity. So Jem, until next time, shine bright and let's get growing.